Welcome back in hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063. The game, Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And we go to our 1025 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, fellas. How are you guys doing this morning?
Doing awesome. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. Charles, the Titans come back from 14 points down on Monday Night Football with about 3 minutes left, and they win 28-27 against the Dolphins. Will Levis with some really impressive drives to close things out there for the Titans. What did that game show you about what the Titans may have in Will Levis, and what did you make of that comeback by the Titans on Monday Night Football?
Well, you know, I it was funny because when I was watching it happen, I thought about a conversation we all had earlier in the season where Joe asked, you know, with how bad the offensive line is, do you maybe think of not starting Will Levis just to protect him from injury? And, you know, I think we came to the conclusion that, look, getting snaps, getting the experience, going through the ups and downs of these starts is really going to be what's most valuable for him. And that's what we saw against the Dolphins. To me, that is one of those that you put in the bank for him, where despite having – I'm still concerned about ball security with him, but we watched him go through ball security issues. We watched opportunities in that fourth quarter where he could have broken and just been like, you know, how many times am I going to fumble, throw these, you know, some bad interceptions and, you know, just go into a shell and you lose a game. And he did the opposite. I think he showcased I told you guys last week, one of the things I've learned about him that I didn't know is how tough he was. I think this was a game where we saw a lot of that toughness, where he was taking hits and still coming back and making plays, showing resiliency, gave the offensive line an opportunity in that last 4 minutes to really step up and protect him at times. So to me, I just think that was – it hurts your draft positioning, which sucks, but it was one of those situations where I think in that locker room – guys start to look at Will Levis and they see, you know, they see toughness, they see resiliency, they see the skill set on display, and it's just a confidence win for the whole organization. And I think despite the fact that it was a terrible turnover game for him, it was probably the best game he's played because he was put into an opportunity to say, you know, I'm going to put the team on my back, we're going to make these big plays where we have to, and you know, just to pull out a game like that, an immense confidence builder, I think, for him. I think it's got to feel great for the coaching staff as well, moving forward after a game like that. Hopefully he can stay a little healthier. But I think, you know, his ability to take hits and keep going is great, but you can't do that forever. He's got to learn to protect himself a little bit. But, yeah, heck of a win, and now you're getting the Texans, I think. You know, you want to catch a team at the right time. The Texans are pretty beat up right now, and – they got a chance to win another one this week.
So what do you think that you mentioned the coaching staff, Charles, and obviously we've had a lot of discussions with you and just with and without you about Vrabel and all, you know, the losing and the Patriots and all that stuff. So what do you think that result does, even if it's not even specific to him, but just like in a coach in a similar situation, what does it mean to get a win like that? Given how things have been going?
Yeah, I mean, it's galvanizing. Come on, you know, we've been in locker rooms before, and you go through, you know, a 6-11 season or what used to be a 6-10 season or a 5-11 season, 5-10 or, you know, 5-12 season, and it's crushing. Like, it's hard to deal with, you know, failure, ups and downs, but never really feel like you've had a breakthrough moment. This gives them a breakthrough moment. I think it not only galvanizes that locker room, but you saw, you know, there was a moment where Levis comes off the field and you can just see his interaction with the coaching staff, how pumped up he is, the sideline. Like, it's galvanizing for a staff too. And I did think, especially when I kind of looked at where the Texans were at coming into this game, the injuries they have, the opportunity I think is here for the Titans to put up another win against a team that, you know, has been a quality team this year, albeit, you know, getting running into a buzzsaw of injuries right now. In my mind, I'm like, I wonder if this, if you can showcase the last, you know, quarter of the season what the Titans are building into and have a quarterback that you have confidence in, whether or not that helps, you know, this situation where if the Kraft family comes calling, and I think it's pretty clear that Belichick's on his way out there, that if they show interest in Mike and Mike has a conversation with ownership, you know, Mike is going to have some information, you know, in front of him this last quarter of the season. And if you feel like you have momentum, I think that plays into any decision that ultimately gets made. And I think even for ownership, you know, they have to feel, I think Amy has to feel like, I'm seeing things right now from this team that are encouraging, and it's been a really rough season. We've lost players, and yet, you know, I think the record's pretty respectable for everything that the team's gone through, and the personnel holes that are still there that will need work. But I don't think there's any thought in my mind that if the Kraft family picks up the phone and says, "Hey, we'd like to talk to Mike. We'd like to consider this, you know, potentially trading for Mike. Is he available?" There's no question in my mind this is going to be a difficult kind of acquisition for the Patriots at this point, if Mike even wants to leave, or, you know, there's any opportunity there for the Patriots. And I told you guys, what, a month ago, I mean, whenever we talked about this, none of this really is even possible until this season ends. Mike and that coaching staff has an opportunity to know everything that happened, where the arrows pointed, how they feel about the personnel, Ran, obviously Carthon as well. And then he has an opportunity to talk to ownership at the end of the season about just where they stand, like where is this going? And then at that point, I think it becomes realistic whether or not the Patriots have any opportunity to get involved with Mike.
So Charles, the Raiders last week get shut out 3-0 by the Vikings. And then they hang up 63 last night against the Chargers, which at one point looked like they may be on their way to hanging up about 90 last night against the Chargers.
Yeah.
But it ends up being 63-21. Does Brandon Staley make it through the end of today as head coach of the Chargers?
That is the best way to frame it. I'll put it that way. I don't think it's a foregone conclusion. He's not going to make it, period. Okay. Like he's not going to keep his job. I know he said afterward, like he didn't know whether or not, you know, he's going to be the head coach of the Chargers after all this. I can answer that question. He's not. He's not going to survive this. And, you know, I think for the Spanos family, it comes down to, do we make this move now and effectively start our coaching search now? Or do we go ahead and let him finish out the season in a scenario in which, to me, everyone's going to know you're already doing your coaching search behind his back. And so it's really an ownership preference at this point. You know, if you let Brandon Staley go now, if you want to do the search, you know, using a search group, you can go that route and hire them, or you can begin to, you know, do your own vetting privately. And it's basically just, how do they want to handle this moving on out? But there's no way. I mean, that 42-0 halftime lead was just, it's despicable given, I know Justin Herbert's not there. I know the roster's had some injuries, but it's really despicable, especially defensively, how bad this Chargers team has been. And by the way, they got beat up by rookies. Like, if you know what the win last night was for? It was for former Raiders general manager Dave Ziegler, because you saw Aiden O'Connell, for where he was picked in the draft. You know, you saw the talent that was there for the Raiders quarterback, Trey Tucker, the receiver, Michael Mayer. I think you saw a rookie class for the Raiders that they felt pretty good about the regime before it was fired, before Dave Ziegler and Josh McDaniels were fired. These were players that they felt like were going to be a foundation in the next year's draft class. They were going to keep building on top of it. So you got whipped by effectively some offensive rookies that were not even considered super high tier guys. I mean, Michael Mayer obviously was the tight end, but it's an awful look for the Chargers. And regardless of whether Staley gets fired or not today, he's getting fired. He's not going to continue to be the head coach of that organization. And any offensive coaches right now, whether it's you know, you got to find the right fit for Justin Herbert. So I wouldn't say like Philly's Brian Johnson makes a ton of sense, but you know, Ben Johnson in Detroit, you know, if Harbaugh is not the head coach of Michigan beyond this season, any coaches with an offensive resume, that's got to be an extremely attractive job heading into the offseason.
We'll have more with Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. We continue our conversation right now with Charles Robinson of Yahoo Sports. Joe Rex Road, the floor is yours.
Yeah, Charles, actually, I want to follow up.
Oh, no. Oh, boy.
Don't worry. I don't want to ask you about Michigan State basketball and how you want to fire Izzo. I'm not going to get into that.
I called that one right. Anyway, let's keep going.
It's fine. We could use him around the studio a little more before the show. So
we could.
That's fine. I do. You meant, but I'll go. I will go back to our home state for something you mentioned. Harbaugh. Interesting yeah. situation. It feels like, I mean, let's see. A couple years ago, he kind of had the breakthrough, but I feel like the NFL still was like, eh. I mean, even Michigan fans were like, okay. And now, of course, it's like he can cheat, do whatever he wants, get suspended for two different things, and he walks on water. Please, please don't leave us, Harbaugh. But I also feel like it's like the NFL maybe has thawed and come around more on him. Do you think that he's going to be hotly pursued this offseason?
Okay, I would say in terms of the NFL having thawed, you know, there's different opinions, you know. I think everyone knows that Harbaugh is a burnout guy, that, you know, they know he's having problems with his athletic director. They know that obviously going through the San Francisco experience, the word around that building, and I was there when that all came to a head between he and Trent Baalke and Jed York, the owner was in the middle of it, and it was like this, you know, you had like a Harbaugh clock where it was like, it's like 5 years. You can stand him for 5 years. And then it's like people start quitting or, you know, he's just got all kinds of fractures inside the building because of what his personality is, how he grinds on people. People still have that institutional memory. There's enough people in the league that still know that this is the kind of coach that he is. Now that flies a little easier in college where the coaching staffs are, you know, you see a more significant spate of change in coaching staffs in college. You see coordinators come and go. You'll see positional coaches swap out. So it's a little easier to weather having a guy who grinds on you like that. NFL is not quite like that. You don't want to see that constant turnover either with your coordinators or your assistants because you want, you know, supreme continuity, not just year to year, but, you know, it would be great if you could have it, you know, in 3-4 year blocks. So, you know, I think that is something that's a piece of data that people put into the mix. And I remember when, you know, Denver was pursuing him when he was in the mix with Minnesota. These were conversations I was having with people that were involved in the middle of the process. And it was like, you know, the Denver pursuit was very much ownership driven. You had, like ownership really liked Harbaugh, just felt like, hey, this is the kind of football coach I want. He's all football all the time. He's the kind of leader we want to put in place. You know, Minnesota, I think it was more of a Harbaugh push. Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, the general manager there, was some overlap between he and Kwesi when he was still in San Francisco. So there's some familiarity. I think Kwesi thought, you know, I'm going for a home run here. You know, to go get a guy of this stature who'd taken obviously the 49ers to the Super Bowl. I will say the one thing about Harbaugh that he does have in his favor is he has shown historically he does have an ability to figure out how to win with different looks and you know, different quarterbacks. And remember, this was the guy who made the move to Colin Kaepernick with the 49ers at a time where a lot of people didn't think Kaepernick was really a viable starting quarterback in the NFL because of the way that he played. Remember, he ran that pistol offense in the NFL, and when it was clicking, it looked really, really good. Now, what people tend to forget as time passed, he had an unbelievable defense. I mean, they were absolutely loaded, and that was really, I think, the spine of that Super Bowl team But, you know, he goes to Michigan. He decides, hey, everybody's zigging. I'm going to zag. I'm going to go back to the kind of power football that I knew under Bo Schembechler when I played at Michigan. And he, in some respects, I mean, albeit the results weren't always they haven't been a national championship winner yet, but he took a lot of, you know, the spread offenses and defenses that were lighter and faster and said, you know, we're just going to build our offensive line and we're going to hammer you and we're going to run it down your throat and eventually you're going to wear out and you're going to break. And then what did he do with J.J. McCarthy? He developed the kid into a first-round quarterback. J.J. McCarthy goes in the draft this year despite the very light passing load. I have no doubt. I don't know if he's going to be the top 10 pick that I see. You know, some people think he's potentially a top 10 pick. I don't know about that, but I think he would be a first-round quarterback. And so what has he done at Michigan but develop an offense that has given top-tier elite teams trouble? He's developed a first-round quarterback. I mean, these are all things that I think the NFL, you know, are positives. And so he would be pursued. I don't know that he'd be pursued by everyone. He's not going to be someone at the top of NFL teams' lists. It's going to be a more nuanced sort of list. You know, he's getting up on some more nuanced lists where they specifically want a leader. They don't necessarily want someone who's got to come in and turn around and rebuild an entire program. I don't know that maybe Harbaugh is that guy on the NFL level right now.
So, Charles, you had an interesting piece at Yahoo Sports talking about the decision that's coming up for the Chicago Bears with Justin Fields and potentially drafting, you know, a quarterback at number one overall with Carolina, with them having Carolina's number one overall pick. How do you view that decision and what all goes into that, whether it's passing on another quarterback at the top of the draft to keep Fields, or trading Justin Fields at some point and moving on to Caleb Williams, Drake May, whoever it would be that they choose with the number one overall pick?
Yeah, I was actually surprised because when I set out to do the piece, I really thought there were two things I thought. I didn't, in my mind, I was like, I don't think this doesn't feel like the absolute slam dunk decision at this point that maybe it felt like earlier in the season when, you know, Fields was really struggling as much as he was. And number two, the compensation, I thought, you know, maybe if this guy closes out strong, they could potentially get like a fringe first round pick for him or something that adds up to first round value in a package. And by the time I wrote the story, I had had seven general managers respond. And the surprise for me was no, there's no first round value here, despite the fact that he has managed to show, like, it was interesting sort of the line of demarcation because he's played 34 games now. So in the minds of evaluators, they're like, that's two NFL seasons. Let's look at the first 17 block. Let's look at the second 17 block and see what we can see. And there's definitely really there's marked improvement. You can see it there. But everyone said, no, there's no first round value here. He's only got 1 year of cheap control left on his contract after this season. Then there's the fifth year option decision, which will not be a year of cheap control. You're looking at, you know, we'll see where that number falls, but it's going to be around $20 million for that fifth year option. And so there was that, and then there was an element of you know, from these seven general managers, it was unanimous. They all said, no, you got to take Caleb Williams. If they have that first pick in the draft, just because of Caleb Williams' acumen as a passer, his ability to win as a passer, and people bring up this, you know, look, he had a lot of play out of structure this year at USC, and there's clearly some red flags there. Some people are nervous about that. But even the critics think that he can – look, what he brings to the table, you can get him to play in structure enough and he'll be okay. And they just felt like the talent disparity between the two guys, even though as one said, you know, he talked about quote unquote physically gifted when he talked about Fields. It's just the difference as a passer. You really got to be able to win games consistently from the pocket as a passer. And right now Fields has continued to show inconsistency in that part of the game. And by the way, what's interesting about this was it was seven when I wrote it, but two others got to me after the piece had already been posted and they agreed. His value, not first round. You're talking like I had a GM actually this morning before I came on. He said third and a fifth is what they're going to be looking at in terms of his trade value. And, you know, also agreed that Caleb Williams is, is a guy, and so it's really nine GMs, nine. That's more than a quarter of the league, you know, sitting there saying, yeah, you got to trade him. You got to take Caleb, and his value is going to be, you know, I think the at best the package, I had a GM, and an NFC GM who said, you know, like a second rounder and, you know, a second rounder, and you're going to get Caleb and a late pick back. Or excuse me, not Caleb. You're going to get Fields and a late pick back. So even kind of a struggle to get just a straight second rounder out of him. I will – one caveat, we all know this. If one team falls in love with him the rest of the way, you know, he's got four games left, and he really continues to showcase the better parts of his game, and if a team's desperate, you know, and he fits, you could probably get a little more draft comp than maybe we're thinking right now. And as the piece said, if you go out and you hire Brian Johnson, the OC from the Eagles, everyone – it was remarkable to me how many people said the Eagles offense, that's where you want this guy. If you can get some element of the Eagles offense and, you know, Brian Johnson's your head coach, this kid would really flourish in that offense.
Well, real quick, I mean, the interesting place I look at here is Atlanta, Charles. Now, yeah. I also think that, like, Arthur Smith, first of all, Arthur Smith coming back next year, if you know that, let us know. But also, I think Tannehill could be of obvious interest there. But I do look, I feel like Justin Fields could be fascinating,
yes,
even in that offense.
Very, you know, heavy RPO stuff. That to me is the, it was the, hey, if it's not the Eagles offense, there, a lot of people are looking at Atlanta and they're saying, you know, this would be an upgrade over Ridder. Just, you know, coach him up, figure it out with the passing game, you know, work it out. And, you know, I even had somebody who said, like, Lamar Jackson-esque type of an offense where it's not going to be the, you know, the greatest high-end, you know, from the pocket type stuff, but he's going to be dynamic enough with Drake London, with Pitts, you know, pieces on that offense that would really fit mismatch style of offense. And yeah, that's another one. I will tell you this. I think Arthur Smith's in decent shape. Okay. I really do. I don't know if there's an imperative that he has to make the playoffs this year. But to me, I think ownership, I do think Atlanta and Arthur Blank, one of the things that they're going to talk about this off season, they're going to wait and see how it finishes. And then there's going to be the question, like, is Ridder the guy? Like, is this what is keeping us from sort of breaking through right now, having a quarterback with a limited ceiling? Like, Ritter's had moments, but he clearly has a limited ceiling. I think everyone understands that there. And what could we do to potentially resolve that? Well, that's when you talk about Fields. You can go get Fields for something that does not include a first-round pick, and he fits that RPO offense well. That could be a big difference maker. So, good thought. I think that's one that certainly should be on the rails when the season ends, if Arthur Smith remains.
Well, Charles, great stuff as always, man. Really appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning, and have yourself a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely. Appreciate it, fellas. Take care.
Absolutely. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, our guest on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll react to what Charles had to say coming up next. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan tomorrow night for Vanderbilt men's basketball. The Commodores take on Texas Tech on the road. Tip off at 6:30 p.m. with pregame beginning at 6 o'clock. Coverage also available on the 94.9 The Fan app. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 The Game.